Let's come out of recess and we'll go from there. In the Madanovich matter, I'm going to suspend the continuation of the scheduled agenda item at this point. And advise the board that there is, with our legal counsel, a non-disciplinary consent agreement that will go into effect from this day forward. Okay.
Any particulars?
Yeah.
A doctor will refrain from all assessment of any form with any population in any situation. She'll limit any of her practice to counseling, primarily geriatric cases, a thing which she's been doing on the side successfully for some time.
She also stated that she does have some minor children that she sees just for counseling purposes. I think the intent was not to limit her counseling to any certain population, but testing, evaluation, assessment in every population, she will restrict her practice and only use her psychology license for therapy counseling services.
Okay. Do we have to take a motion or anything?
Doctor, you got a question over here, Doctor.
Question. Is there anything about how long it will go?
Indefinite.
Yeah. Her license expires in December. I think it's her intent probably to renew, but this restriction on her practice will continue as long as her license is active. So I do think a motion would be appropriate to stay the underlying proceedings and to authorize me to execute or draft and have the staff execute the consent agreement in accordance with the terms expressed by Dr. Bohansky.
Okay. So moved.
Motion.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Dr. Meyer, I'd like to do the number 6-2C concerns that you had.
Yes, so if you turn, well, pages aren't on there. Just past the transcript, there is a spreadsheet with the number of hours from her pre-internship. Now, her pre-internship was from a master's program prior to her doctorate, but it was...
wait one second till we get there.
Okay. What?
Where is it in here?
About two-thirds of the way through, looks like this. It's just past the transcripts.
Got it.
So master's program was for educational counseling towards a certificate in school psychology. So it was in line with her doctoral training. My only concern was the number of hours that she's reporting. So this shows she had 1,650 hours for her pre-internship, but that was done from January of 04 through June of 04, whereas two pages later, the verification form says it was January to May of 04. But so even though she reports that she was working 40 hours per week, those numbers add up closer to 70 to 80 hours per week.
So where's the verification?
This is the hours.
And oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Two pages after that, is the verification form. So even best case scenario, she may have been able to get approximately 1,000 hours during that period of time if she was doing 40 hours a week the whole time, which would still leave her 300 hours short of the required 3,000.
I'm doing the math.
So January to May, it looks like.
Yeah. I mean, 40 hours per week times 4 weeks should be 160 hours a month, give or take. And she's reporting 300 hours per month.
So what would typically happen I'm looking at her. So the next page then is for internship?
Internship I don't have a concern with.
Right. She earned 1,700 hours.
Hey, I come up with her numbers when I do the math. And just let me step through it. The first on the spreadsheet is 12 weeks, January, February, and March, times 40 hours. That comes out to 480. She reports 450. The next one is 8 weeks times 40 hours, comes out to 320. She reports 300. The next one is 8 times 40, comes out to 320. She reports 300. And the last one is the same.
All right, 8 times 40. How do you get, you're doubling the months. So you'd.
That entire period is only 6 months.
Right, so it's 6 months. So.
Yeah, you're double counting months.
You're double counting months because she's double.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So she's going, yeah, January to March. Then you can't count March again. Then down on the third one down. So yeah.
Wow.
How she did it
good
the way
catch,
I just
the way
did
it's
it.
Broken up. It's a, you know, it's not. So you're right. She got six months. At 4.2 weeks.
Yeah, if you take it, it's like 26 weeks, that'd be 1,040 total.
It's almost like there's another page missing then.
Well, but then 2 pages later on her verification form, it says the date of supervised experience was from 1-2004 to 5-2004.
Yeah. And that's what's reported on here. Somehow they get 1,650 hours in that period of time.
I think we ask her to address it.
All right, I'm okay with a
good catch.
So there's two things we can do in her case of her application. Because she meets the 1,500 hours, she's actually eligible to sit for the exam. Under the
EPPP
only. So we can change her category to, so the fact that she took her first exam, she would be under the other category of just sitting for the exam, EPPP. So that is so her first exam is not in vain, so to speak, you know. So yep. And we can go ahead and approve her, but we have to change her category. In the meantime, we need to tell her that the additional 1,500 hours does not meet the requirements based on the paperwork she submitted. She can go ahead and submit either postdoc hours, redo these forms, and do postdoc for the remaining.
Yeah, so she'll
treat her under
she
that.
She passes the exam and turns in postdoc hours, then she's good.
Or she turns in corrected paperwork. Maybe she's got her dates
right.
Well, it could be a request for additional information, possibly. Yeah. If there's a way she can
fix this,
explain this.
Or change it to the other, then she can go ahead and take the exam again, and then.
Or maybe add stuff that would more clearly do the hours.
Yep. Yeah.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Did we make copies of that for folks to look at?
Mm-hmm. Everyone has one.
Yeah. Everyone has one. We all have one.
Yours is here.
Oh, is that the copy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. I thought that was the original.
Mm-mm. Everyone
Kathy
has a copy.
Made copies for everyone.
Thank you.
Okay. Just for the hell of it, if you've got the original one there, sometimes when applicants reapply, they hurriedly fill out all the forms again when they don't need to.
Did she refill
it? It's possible that there's an original set of forms with the original applicant that might have different dates on.
Okay, I can take a look.
Look at that original form, please.
Yep.
Just so that we're being thorough with it. That was my reason for asking for the original file, was to say if, because two things had to have happened here. A, some very good people, Dr. McCarthy at Argosy, had to miss that, because that's pre-doctoral stuff, and the schools look at that. And then our committee, which is damn good, had to miss it. And that's two people who wouldn't miss it.
The copies you have in front of you, there is an original application, and then there is her reapplication is on top of it.
Oh, okay. They're both here.
So the verifications that you're looking at were from her original application.
They're okay. Yeah. That's my concern. Okay. All right. Then we'll approve her to sit for the exam. Do we need a motion?
Yes.
I move we approve to...
We change her to a...
Change the category that she's approved under to exam only, and then we send her a letter letting her know that she needs 800. Was it 800?
She would need to redo the paperwork.
Yeah, it's not clear how many she actually would
get. Okay. To have her clarify the 3,000-hour total, if that makes sense to everybody. Are we good?
Seconded.
We have a motion, a second. Any discussion?
A little discussion.
Yes, sir.
We could also indicate if she finds that she's deficient, can't document those, she could include those that could be accepted.
Like
doctoral hours, then
it
could be all done.
Yeah, I think
and
she's
we've
doing
had people
that now.
Turn in postdoc stuff while they're still studying for the exam. So, or clarifying other things. Well, we can move her forward.
Okay, excellent. Thank you, everyone. And
we need a vote.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Let's move to 23. Discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding a behavior analyst application for licensure submitted by Shauna Silverman and possible denial of the same. Dr. Davis Wilson, please.
Yes. Shauna submitted her application, or Ms. Silverman submitted her application to the committee. The committee reviewed the application and determined that the supervision was not completed by a licensed behavior analyst here in Arizona. However, the hours were completed here in Arizona. So the committee or board staff did reach out to her to confirm that there wasn't any additional hours that may have been accrued that could count towards licensure. She has confirmed that there were not and would like to withdraw her application. The committee would be in agreement with giving her the opportunity to withdraw her application.
Any discussion?
So don't we take a motion and then there's something.
Motion to withdraw, allow her to withdraw.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Allow her to withdraw her application.
Oh, yeah. I thought we were just doing the summary first. But, I'll make a motion to allow her to withdraw the application.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion second. Any further discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
The motion passes. Let's go to item number 10, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding a request from Danielle DiPaolo, PsyD, holder of a temporary license number 10, for approval of postdoctoral training plan modification. Dr. Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. DiPaolo, submitted or was approved for temporary licensure in February of this year. She's under supervision at the prison. The prison health services underwent a contract change, so it was provided by Corizon. Now it's Centurion. The supervisor stayed the same. All of the conditions stayed the same. So it's only the name of the agency that is different. So I didn't see any concern with accepting her new supervision contract.
Is that a motion?
Discussion? I would make a motion to accept her new contract.
A second.
A motion second. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Number 11, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding Dr. Menger as it relates to compliance with the consent agreement in case number 1808, possible extension of time frame for fitness for duty evaluation in the interim consent agreement for case number 1833. Ms. Mickelson.
Could we table that, Mr. Chairman, for about 10 minutes? Because Mr. Hover was going to call in.
I didn't realize that. We will hold that one. Number 12, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding proposed substantive policy agreement for determination of residency in relation to HB 2569. Ms. Jones.
Mr. Chairman, board members, in response to House Bill 2569, which is the universal recognition for licensure, it was suggested that we issue a substantive policy statement on residence and what the determination for that will be. And I have submitted that memo, or actually the substantive policy statement should be.
It's in there.
It's in there.
I'm sorry, I'm not finding it. But that would be for your consideration and possible approval.
And it appears that the list of what you can use to as evidence of being a resident in Arizona seems pretty standard.
So, yes, that came from the Attorney General's opinion.
Yeah. I make a motion to adopt it.
Okay. I have a couple of questions.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Now discussion, please.
So my question is, we face this all the time at the university, and how long do they need to have the license? You know, kind of the length of time. What if they've been here for 12 months, but they go and get the license the day before and walk in, and then they want you to change? I mean, I'm just, those are some of the things that come up with.
Right. But according to this, they've had to mandate the issuance of a professional occupational license to the person who has been licensed in another state for 12 months.
Yeah, but once they move here,
right?
How do we establish Arizona residency?
Well, that's what the whole, that's what the list is, a valid driver's
license. But how long? That's the question.
I don't think the law said how long.
I think it looks to their intent to stay, mm-hmm. to establish a residence here, and their intent to stay, not how long they've been here.
Right, because I think the intent of the law was people can come.
So how many pieces of evidence do we want? If somebody has one piece, somebody has, those are the things that come up, at least at the university, we've had to deal with in terms of residency.
Right. And that's up to the discretion of the agency. The statute is silent on that.
Okay, so we're the agency. What do we want?
You are the agency.
I think standards, two pieces of documentation, at least anytime like the school district, or I'm trying to think about when I had to.
So if you register to vote and you get a driver's license, that makes you an Arizona resident. Would that count for Arizona residency for tuition purposes? You want 12 months of documented residency.
I don't think you can do that. I think that that's the point of the whole law, is that they want to allow people to come
that
in.
That agency does it.
Mm-hmm. Which agency?
NAU.
The universities. I mean, we have very, very...
That's a different state.
And that's to show, to get a benefit for being in state. Here we're looking forward.
Right.
To get this benefit.
Yeah.
Whether you're going to stay.
For us, it's the tuition, which is a huge difference.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You got a question?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, yeah. In order to file for divorce in this state, you have to prove that you've been a resident for at least 90 days. And you do that by showing documentation of, like, utilities or whatever. And so that sounds, that to me would sound more substantial. Rather than us, they just register to vote and get a driver's license, good, I'm a resident. You know, I think it would make it easier for us to determine if they're a resident.
Well, you can't put that stipulation. I'll tell you all the reasons
okay.
I've heard.
I guess
I'm renting.
Deal with it.
Okay. I'm just renting from somebody a room, so I don't have utilities in my name. I'm banking online, so I don't have a bank. I don't have a rental contract. These are all the excuses I've heard over the years. I don't pay mortgage. The two things that they can get, and most of them will get, they don't own a car. I've heard that. They don't make enough money to file taxes. They don't have kids. So pretty much I've seen everything on here. The only two things that they will go get, I've even had no driver's license because they don't drive. So they don't have, but they can get a permanent ID card. Yeah, actually I've worked with students who've said that except for voter registration. They don't drive. They have a visual impairment. They don't own a car. They're living with mom and dad on a couch. They don't
but
have
I think we're looking at, these are professionals that are looking at me.
Right. Yeah, okay.
You know, these
yeah.
aren't students.
My population's different.
Yeah, it's a different population. Well, so, I mean, they should have... So, I mean, it's about...
I'm
going,
sorry. I'm putting my academic hat to
it's going for, it's the idea was to allow people to come and work in Arizona and the show intent that they're going to be here and that they've worked 6-12 months somewhere else. So I think the list is good. If there's yeah. someone that can come in and say all those things... then I guess we'd have to look at it as a board.
All those things or two of those things?
Well, I'm just saying if they said they don't have any of these, then we'd look at it as a board. I'm sure they'd have two at least.
So, yeah, I just don't know. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, universities, you want to pay in-state tuition. There are probably ways. You can't just move here and be a student. It doesn't count.
Yeah, so
but,
they do all of this.
So, I mean, I like
but
to...
But if you moved here and were a student for a full year and did things in the state, would you be a resident?
Well, if your parents are paying for your education and you move here and your intent is not to stay here, you're just trying to get by, no, you cannot change your residency. So.
Yeah, it gets convoluted.
Mr. Chairman, board members, I think the intent of this law is to allow people that have moved here or showing one of these valid forms have the intent to get licensed. That doesn't mean that they're going to stay or whatever, but I think that we need to look at the minimum versus the maximum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the intent of the law was to encourage people to move to Arizona.
Right.
And this is the list that the AG's office has
Let me ask one little question of you, dear. We're not the only board struggling with this. What have other boards determined to be their similar policy statement or acceptance statement? Thinking that maybe we might want to be in line with what our colleagues and the other professions are doing?
Mr. Chairman, board members, other boards are accepting this and just having one of these. They're going to the minimum to avoid a possible legal action.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going, what is the minimum base requirement? And that's what other agencies have done are doing.
What's the minimum thing you have to do? That's a hell of a way to run a ship.
It sure is.
I don't think the issue so much is the issue I think you have more issue problem is that they just have to have 12 months of license somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They come to Arizona. They're going to work in Arizona. Whether it's 5 of these, 10 of these, we're still going to let them work because they have 12 months somewhere else. So I think that this fits enough to the intent. You can, if you show me one of these, your intent's to stay here. It's not for me to question whether you're staying or not. The law allows them, if they have 12 months, to work here, whether we feel comfortable with that or not.
Can we call it state residency or something, not just residency, because we have the term residency used in our statute?
The statute, the 2569, is going to address is 324302, and that refers to residence as an R-E-S-D-E-N-C-E, residence, not residency.
Okay.
So if there was a typo on the agenda, but it is residence,
okay,
not residency.
Thank you.
And the statement says residency, the proposed, but I can certainly amend that and change it to residence.
Because we've got a huge issue coming up with residency based on...
RDC.
Yeah.
And I will change the verb.
Not the same.
So I'll make a motion to approve this substantial policy statement.
Is there a second?
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
Yes. A correction in there says, at least what I'm reading here, says a current a motor vehicle registration should be a current motor vehicle registration. Drop that A.
Yeah, good catch.
See
sorry?
That? Second one.
The second bullet point,
a current, you have a motor.
You have vehicle. A in front of the word motor. A current a motor vehicle registration under the, you see that?
Yes, you're
okay.
Correct. That'll be fixed too. Thank you.
Excellent. All in favor?
Oh. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Dr. Malott, did you want
to... No, I was just going to say this takes care of the whole exam issue. Just establish residency and...
Well, just wait till somebody establishes residency and they're... get their license and their wife wants to go to NAU to school and they've only been here 3 days
and we'll deny their
got
residency
their driver and you're going to deny him residency to go to school, but we're going to give his husband a psychology license.
They can still go to school, they just have to pay more.
But they're going to argue that the state board has declared them a resident. Yeah.
An official organ of the state government has declared them to be a resident, so who the hell are you to charge me out-of-state tuition?
A resident as it pertains to profession.
No, they're in the NAU. They need the money.
Gene is kind of hiding on it.
My head's going to explode.
I'm not going to worry about that. But.
I would reference you a legal case. You might want to go back and check. It's called Bohansky versus Arizona State.
Really?
Huh?
Really?
And the topic was residency. And guess who won?
They did.
The state.
I'm going to look that up.
Really? Is that for you're saying something real? No.
That's surprising. All right, let's move on.
I filed two lawsuits in my life. One was against the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners, and one was against Arizona State University.
We need to vet our members better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was a radical when I was in college.
Has that changed?
That hasn't changed a hell of a lot, no. All right. Let's move on to number 13. Discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding adoption of proposed applications for universal recognition for psychologists and behavior analysts. Ms. Jones.
Mr. Chairman, board members, Kathy has worked on drafting up applications for your consideration, although I don't know that we've gotten the full legal okie-dokie yet. For the universal recognition, because we do need to have these ready by August 27th when the law goes into effect. So.
Is Jan on the line?
Pardon?
Is Jan on the line? Do we call her?
Dr. Brundage?
Mm-hmm.
She should be.
Okay.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, good. Just check. Sorry.
Sitting in 75-degree weather watching the waves splash and generally trying to ignore us.
There could be not, but I'm here.
Thank you. Is this something we need to action on today?
Well, you won't. Since the law goes into effect August 27th, yes.
And what are you asking of us?
Just that you all would approve the format for changing the for providing our applications for the universal recognition.
I make them up. I
read them on the website.
Yeah, I looked at them. I mean, I'll make a motion. You need a motion to approve the applications that were.
We have a motion.
I'll second it.
We have a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, number 11, they're on the phone, if you would be available to take that now.
All right, number 11, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding Dr. Manger as it relates to compliance with consent agreement in case number 1808 and possible extension of the time frame for his fitness for duty evaluation in the interim consent agreement for case number 1833. Could we have a brief summary?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and board members. To recap, at the board's in-person meeting back on June 7th, they had reviewed complaint number 18-33. This was the informal interview, and Dr. Major and his attorney, Mr. Hover, were present. At this time, the board offered Dr. Major an interim consent agreement in order that would require him to undergo a fitness for duty evaluation within 35 days of the effective date. Dr. Major did subsequently sign the interim consent agreement. The effective date was June 28th, which would require the evaluation to be completed by August 2nd. Dr. Major had ultimately chosen Dr. Blackwood to complete the evaluation. He was one of the three providers listed in the interim consent agreement. In corresponding with Mr. Hover, he had relayed to me that the earliest date that Dr. Blackwood would be able to do the evaluation was August 14th, and that an appointment had been set for that date. This matter is before the board today as the scheduled evaluation is 12 days past the due date that's specified in the interim consent agreement, so the board would need to approve an extension for this time. In addition, at the board's meeting on June 7th, they had requested that we discuss a status update today regarding Dr. Major's compliance with the current consent agreement that he's on with respect to a previous complaint. And the concern was in regards to the status of him obtaining a practice monitor. The consent agreement order that he had entered into with the board was back in March, and it specified that he would need to select a practice monitor within 10 days of the effective date of that consent agreement. At the board's meeting on June 7th, they did have concerns that he did not have a practice monitor in place yet and was not in compliance with that consent agreement. Following that meeting, the board office was contacted by Dr. Christopher Nichols, who indicated that he would be providing the practice monitoring to Dr. Major. Dr. Nichols is one of the individuals that was listed in the consent agreement. On July 5th, he did email me an update to let me know how the supervision was going, and he indicated that they had met twice for supervision in July and are continuing to meet as per the specifications in the consent agreement. His update is included in the memo that was uploaded to the member portal, and that's all I have, unless any of the members have questions.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? So what we're asked to do is approve an extension for Dr. Blackwood's report.
Correct.
For the evaluation to take place.
Right? Correct.
For evaluation to take place. Okay. I'd wait an extra 12 days for Dr. Blackwood. Dr. Brundage.
I believe at this point that at times it can be difficult to get in, and so at this time, if he's on the schedule for Dr. Blackwood, I would state that it's extremely important that he follows through at that time, but if once that is submitted, then we can determine. I think we provide that to him.
Is that a motion?
Does his attorney want to say anything?
Yes.
Mr. Hover, do you want to?
Hello, this is Charlie Hover.
Hi, Charlie. Do you want to say anything?
No, sir. Just Jennifer did a really nice job of summarizing it. We have Dr. Blackwood scheduled and payment made and whatnot, so we are just waiting for Wednesday to roll around.
Thank you. It is scheduled for Wednesday.
It is the 14th.
And he will be there.
Yes, sir.
Excellent.
All right. I'll second the motion.
Dr. Brundage.
Yes, I think that it's extremely important that the licensee follow through. If there's anything that prohibits him, I think the board needs to be notified immediately about that.
I agree it's important to follow through, and Dr. Hovert will be held in contempt of this board if he client doesn't get it through. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Motion carries. Item number 14, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding recent five-year rule review at the Governor's Regulatory Review Council and options for moving forward with the rule package. Ms. Jones.
Mr. Chairman and board members, the five-year rule review was approved this past Tuesday. So GERC has done their part, and we would now be ready to move forward and ask the governor for an exemption from the rules moratorium, which is currently in line under Executive Order 1901. I have drafted a letter proposing the for the exemption, and it's ready to go. I just need the board's approval, and I base the rules package changes on what we presented in the five-year review.
Any discussion? We just need a motion to approve the package?
So move.
Well, no, it wouldn't be the rules package. It would just be me sending a letter to the governor asking for the exemption.
So move.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Please send the letter to the governor's office. Number 15, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding proposed budget and strategic plan for 2021. Ms. Jones.
Mr. Chairman, board members, I've presented you with the strategic numbers from FY19. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I think you'll note that the behavior analyst had a 28% increase in their numbers over the past year. Psychologists did grow at 3%. And everything else was listed there, so I'll be happy to answer any questions if you have any. As far as the budgeting process, I did not have those numbers finished yet, but I would recommend that we met with OSPB, which is the Office of Strategic Planning and Budgeting, this week, and they are indicating that we should not be asking for any additional funding for items for next year. However, if we're not able to do the digitization of the records, scanning of our paper records this year, I will be asking for that, for funding for that for next year. So we're running into a problem right now with the Conga system that we were going to buy for our software for the e-licensing. So I've reached out to determine if we can transfer some of the funding from the Conga to the records issue, the digitization. But if they won't let me, then I need to plan for that next year.
Okay. Do you need approval of this budget?
No, just
an information only.
I would think approval would be appropriate.
Would you like an approval?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Yes, sir, if we may.
I motion to approve the budget as proposed.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Item 16, discussion, consideration, possible action to offer temporary licenses, and if so, adoption of proposed application form. Ms. Jones.
Mr. Chairman, under Senate Bill 1086, it gives the board the right to offer a temporary license. This is a temporary license. It's basically a 30-day license. Issued to qualified individual to work in the state on a short-term basis by teaching a course, seminar, or class, working during the process of receiving a full and active license, or working while traveling with a sports or athletic team, or providing free services during a declared state or national disaster. Your statutes already allow someone to practice for 20 days. I didn't know if you all wanted to pursue this or not, but it's certainly an option for you to consider. Kathy has been very diligent and has presented a proposed application if you choose to go down this route.
The one question I had is temporary license is defined as someone who's teaching a course or a seminar or class.
Why would you need 30 days?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Why would you need a license?
That's
well, if you're teaching a practicum class, I think our statutes do say if you're teaching a clinical practicum class, you do need to be licensed in that profession. I thought we say that. Didn't we change that?
So. Yeah, but a practicum class is going to last more than 30 days.
And or a seminar class, I'm wondering, like a CE? I just don't know.
Well, we have conferences here all the time, and psychologists from all over the world come and present, and we don't ask them to get licensed here.
Some of the other professions have had problems with this, especially with the spring training teams, some of the professional sports teams. Their doctors are having problems providing care because they travel with the team, but they're not licensed here. So this is kind of that. It was geared towards
but
spring
teaching.
Training.
Goes,
but then we also, some of the agencies also have issues with the someone coming in to do a seminar, a 2 or 3 day seminar, and the way their statutes read, they need a license to do that here. And they, so I believe that was the intent of this, was to try to gather up all those loose ends that people had been complaining about.
I don't see a need for it in psychology. Anyone?
I've never heard anybody asking for that permission, and I don't think we've had an issue.
You know, if you go to New Mexico and you want to testify in a case, you have to notify their board. They have to assign you a supervising psychologist who's licensed there, and there's a whole rigmarole that you have to go through, and most people who get called to testify over there don't know about it, and 6 months later they're in trouble with their board. If we put in some type of temporary thing and expect people to get it, most people won't know about it since they're out of state and don't read our state's rules, and they'll still come through to provide testimony and do X, Y, or Z because we have a 20-day rule that says they can. I don't see why we would add a confusing third one, as we have the SIPAC 30-day rule for interjurisdictional practice. We have our statute rule for 20 days of practice, and I don't think we need a third one, my opinion. Anyone else?
We don't have to have...
No.
Oh, no. Okay.
Okay.
We're going to pass on this one. Thank you. Number 17, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding status update of progress on addressing issues in the Sunset Audit Report. You know, Ms. Jones, again, if you think you can leave here when you're 90% of the...
agenda.
You got another... We're having a drink after this, and you're staying. God. All right, A, recommendation 4, Ms. Mickelson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and board members. In April of 2019, the Auditor General's Office issued their performance audit report, and one of the recommendations was that the board revise their complaint handling procedures that would ensure claims, which are in turn opened as complaints, are made a priority and processed as quickly as possible. The concern was related to the amount of time it would take for these cases to be resolved through the board channels. As you know, the current statute requires a claim to be reviewed by 3 reviewers independently to determine if it merits opening a complaint. If one or more reviewers recommends opening a complaint, then it follows the normal complaint processing procedures. The Auditor General recommended that we evaluate our processes so that claims that become complaints are made a priority when processing, given the amount of time that the cases go through the process. And so board staff has subsequently developed a revised claims policy that addresses their recommendations. For example, in the revised policy, various timeframes are established to ensure they'll get processed efficiently. For example, reviewers have 2 weeks to review the claim and provide their recommendations. The review timeframe was longer previously, so we've cut that down. And also for claims that do become complaints, they take priority in terms of processing over a regular complaint, unless there's egregious allegations, of course, with the regular complaint. and that they will be processed and go to the first possible CSC meeting that it can. So this policy is uploaded to the member portal for your review and approval.
So we've actually been successful in the changes you've made within the office to process this stuff quicker. That's what you're reporting to us.
Mm-hmm. And do we need to approve this?
Pardon?
We need to approve the process.
Yeah. You ignored my one, though.
What was that?
It was the shredding machine.
We can implement.
When one comes in, you just...
So do you need an approval on this?
No, it's just a policy,
just
internal
an
policy.
Okay, B, Ms. Jones, on BCAB?
Oh, yes.
BACB. Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, board members. An audit recommendation number 8, A, B, and C, the auditors spent a great deal of time asking the board to consider adopting processes that the BACB had already completed that they use for certifying the candidates. They wanted us to accept those as part of our licensing process. They wanted to eliminate duplications and licensing by relying on materials that the BACB had already reviewed and approved. And if areas of duplication were identified, the audit asked the board to consider changes and adopt the rules accordingly. Under the information I've tried to, and there's a full memo attached from Krishna outlining the various ways you can become BACB certified, but I hope I did a comparison that made sense between the BACB requirements and the board's requirements for licensure. Basically, my recommendation is that if the board were to accept the BACB information, it would simply be that they verified it. They will not share that information with us. They will not share copies with us. I emailed Misty Bloom, the Chief of Legal Services for the BACB, and she confirmed that they would not share copies of any information with us. They would only say that they confirmed it.
Up or down, yeah.
So if the board were to, I've outlined all the rules that would need to be changed if you choose to take this route. If the board were to accept the verification, perhaps the board may want to just accept the certification as qualification for licensure because you won't have any documentation to support those. So it's up to the board. It's your choice. And that's why I'm bringing it to your attention.
There's something that most hospitals do and most other places that treat patients do. That's called primary source verification. And I think that's a legal statute and standard which has to be upheld if you ever get yourself in a legal ringer. If we cannot get primary source verification but assign that to a third party which refuses to provide the primary source, then I think we're setting ourselves up for some difficulty. So despite the fact that the governor's sunset people seem to think that it would be wonderful to provide other such issues, such as kind of assigning our job to a national certification board, I think it puts us in legal jeopardy, and I think our legal counsel would probably advise us to walk away from this.
My fear is that it would be delegating your authority.
Yes. Anybody? Any other thoughts, comments?
Mr. Chair.
Yes,
go ahead.
I was going to say I agree. It sounds like this will be a lot faster. On the other hand, it may be faster and more stupid. You know, because we need to get it from the source.
We have a fiduciary responsibility to the people of the state of Arizona to do our job and do it well. And secondhand verification is not doing your job well.
I have just one question and point of clarification that I would be seeking. So I agree, especially with the transcripts and the other information. The other the issue with just taking the certificate as well is that the experience hours could still be done remotely without licensure and a bunch of other issues that could come that isn't evident on the BACB's forms. So we would have no way to verify that the actual hours were done in a state with licensure or not. So I agree with the questions and concerns of that. I did think, though, at one point we put in the rules that we would accept the BACB forms. Does that have to come from the supervisor? Because what we're finding is that the BACB will release them, like they won't release them to me as a supervisor. So if I'm in the middle of moving and someone needs them urgently, I can't get them released, but the applicant can get them. So I could request my supervision forms, but I couldn't request forms that I had completed. And obviously I keep copies of my own, but if I were in a position of needing to send something out, so we're unable, the applicant's unable to just provide a copy of the form. I thought the rule read that...
The rule does provide now that an applicant can give us copies of what they sent to BACB. BACB's stance is that they will not give us copies of anything.
Okay, so it doesn't have to come from the supervisor, though.
Not currently, not.
So what if the applicant signs a release?
No, the BACB has been pretty, I think part of it is probably how they store the documents. I'm sure there's other legal pieces, but they won't release that information. So I completely agree with what Dr. Bohensky is saying, is that if we aren't able to access that information, then that already makes the primary verification that much more concerning. My question is specific to, you know, the rule we added in there that they could provide copies of the form, but it's not a technical, like, primary verification because it's the applicant providing them and not necessarily the supervisor.
Right, and that's part of the rule package was to clean up that language because there is the conflict currently between those two rules.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, I'm in agreement with Dr. Bohensky.
Can we just ignore it?
Okay.
All right. I think a motion would be appropriate to decline to accept that recommendation for the reasons stated, just so there's some record that we've acknowledged it.
I'd entertain a motion for...
Basically, we would need to make a motion that we insist on primary course verification.
Mm-hmm. I'd second that.
As we do already.
Motion and second. Any further discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Brundage. 17C, recommendation 7 regarding fee evaluation and possible fee reduction. Ms. Jones.
Mr. Chairman, board members, part of the recommendations from the auditors included that the board may have too much in their reserves. So in light of that and in light of a comment from a legislator about what we were going to do about having a hefty balance, I have tried to address the issues. We have done a study of time spent on applications and licensing and renewals and all that, and then taken into account that all of those fees still pay for all of our other operations, which include investigations and everything else. So I have a couple of recommendations, and the first would be that we eliminate the convenience charge for credit cards. Currently, we charge an individual $6.75 per credit card transaction fee. It's actually less time staff-wise to process a credit card than it is for processing checks. And I feel like the days of people using credit cards is much more common than it used to be. And it's easier for people. Some people don't even write checks anymore. So I hate to be penalizing those people that are paying with credit cards because we are seeing a lot more of it. So that would mean a $5,900 loss in income. It would also mean approximately a $5,000 to $6,000 fee that we'll have to pay for discount fees to the credit card company. It's currently a wash But again, I do see savings on the staff side for credit cards, and just that whole, we don't have the return credit card fees like we do for checks, et cetera. The second recommendation would be that the board consider reducing license fees to $400, and that would be across the board. I was trying to think of an equitable way to look at everybody involved, not strictly new licensees, but renewals, new applicants. Everyone would benefit the from a $100 reduction in fees. The final thing would be, and you certainly don't have to consider it today, but it, you might want to consider it when looking at rules, is we currently charge $2 for a verification form. Honestly, $2 doesn't cover the cost to do the letter and the mailing. So either we would need to increase that, or I would suggest just doing away with it, because it's, $2 is... just doesn't seem reasonable. I know other boards charge $10 to $20, but you, in an effort of good faith, you could just not charge for them.
I got a question. Is the fund balance due because we don't have the appropriation level to spend it, or did we not have items that we needed to spend? Because I know there's been times where, like, for a long time, like, we only sent, like, one person to a conference instead of two. I mean, there's board members weren't, even staff wasn't going, so... is it that we didn't have the appropriation level, or are we, what's the reason for the fund balance?
Well, you've got the appropriation. This last year we had $495,000. We only ended up spending $430,000. So we had a hefty carryover. Now, you want to have some carryover,
yeah,
because when we have that big case where we have to hire an expert.
Right.
Those go through appropriations very quickly. So it's always nice to have a little buffer. But I think just you've had the growing behavior analyst community and the continual renewals, and then we've had the psychologist.
What is the state's position on what do they want to see as a fund balance? I mean, what do they want to see as far as a contingency?
They have not established a standard. I personally like 2 years of operating,
yeah.
But right now that would be at about $1 million, which we're in excess of.
Right.
So in order to avoid a sweep or a fund sweep or something, I think we need to show a way that we're addressing.
Okay.
And considering that a legislator has already asked me point blank, what are you going to do about this money? I'd rather have us come up with an idea than have them, like dental board, the association got very active and put a 3-year moratorium on renewal fees, collection of renewals.
Well, they lost a lot of money in 2009 when they did a big sweep, and we basically gave almost all of our, and then Joe, you and I were on the board at that time.
And fund sweeps, that's what we're trying to elite. We don't want them to just come in and
right.
do a fund sweep.
But so, I'm just curious on the contingency, what if there's an, if we had a... regulatory amount that we're supposed to keep, or what it was.
There's
they do
no
not
amount.
Have a standard.
Mm-hmm. Other discussion. Are we good with accepting our executive director's proposals for altering our fee issues?
And there's no guarantee they won't sweep.
Dr. Bohannon.
Dr. Brundage.
I'll let Mr. Donaldson finish his set, and then I'll comment.
All right, finished.
He says he's done.
Okay.
Well, I'm...
May I interject one thing? So the elimination of the convenience
yeah.
fees will not take a rule or statute change, but the changing, if you were to change the licensure fees, those wouldn't go into effect immediately. That would have to go through the rule process.
Oh, crap.
Yeah, really.
But we've got that whole rule package going anyway, so it's not.
I thought you had an exemption.
Huh?
You have that exemption.
Dr. Bohannon?
I don't have it. That's what I would put
multi
in an exemption.
If we have to up one someday, you have to go through rules.
Yeah. Dr. Brundage.
I would like to know that I was around in 2009, and the sweep was quite detrimental. There was difficulty even functioning on a day-to-day basis. I find it somewhat difficult to understand that boards who try to operate very frugally are penalized for that. I also know that we have many board members who have refrained from charging the state for their time due to the experience of having had a sweep and having very tight times. We've also had difficulties in sometimes appointing new staff, and our staff has worked extra hard with less bodies, and I just think that at this point I would like to note that the staff has done an incredible job operating on less help, and I think that I just find that the idea of cutting our budget for the form to conform with an audit, I don't think other considerations are being evaluated.
Could we just... Dr. Bohansky, could we just recommend maybe getting rid of the credit card fees? That's the one thing I was thinking of. I know I hesitate, like, should I write a check? Because I'm paying $6.75 more. And then I'm lazy enough not to write it. But since it does save time, we want to encourage more people to use their credit cards so you don't have to process checks. That one makes a lot of sense in the short term. The reduction in licensing fee is a little, as you said, you have to do a rule change.
Is that accurate?
Not necessarily.
Is what?
That we have to do a rule change?
Yes, your fees are in rule.
But up to, I thought it
is. I'm looking here. There's an exemption under 41-10005 or 1005.
Dr. Bohansky?
Dr. Brundage.
I also wonder how we're going to be impacted by the universal application. I have no idea how that will impact the volume of applications we have, and if our current fee does not cover the cost of the application. I know that we will continue to mount deficits. So I realize that with the rules change, it will take some time, but I also know that I'm curious how the next year will go.
Well, we have a couple other things hitting on us, too. The state also passed a law that if your income is below or at 200% of the federal poverty level, you don't get an application fee here. We don't know what the impact is going to be on us because an awful lot of folks apply for licensure right out of their intern or residency programs where they're making $20,000 a year. So that's going to put them in that.
Law into effect?
Our legal counsel's busy right now, but I think it is.
Because I was thinking of one of our applications who deferred her application, her exam.
Because of cost.
No, the ECCC. I thought that was.
Oh, the ECCC.
That's what she was. That was what it was.
But it's paid to the board, not directly.
Is fees to the board for the 200% of the federal poverty level issue that's in effect now?
Yes.
Yes.
So when, how do we determine? Have we had anybody appeal? I mean, ask for that waiver?
We've had eight.
Eight.
Okay. And it's just for the application fee. It's not for the ECCC.
In not ECCC. No, it's the application and fees, the licensure fee, initial. After looking at it again, first we were just doing the application.
Mm-hmm.
And then after reviewing it, the language again, it includes the licensure fees. So we've modified it. But we've only had eight people so far. My numbers and projections included 10%. Basis for people falling under that category.
So what do we do? I mean, I was thinking of one of our agenda items today where the student asked for an extension because they couldn't pay the fee. Do we reach out to people like that?
I have not. I'm sorry.
Because I was just thinking they're probably below that.
That was a test fee.
It was a test fee. It was the,
oh, that's different.
It was a test fee, yeah.
Okay.
So I can certainly rework the numbers if you feel that's too much. I can certainly give you different options and have those presented for your next meeting. I was just trying to come up with something to try to address, because I know then...
When do we have to report back to the governor's group?
Well, the auditors will do a six-month follow-up. They were here in April, so...
October.
May, June, July, August. October.
Okay.
So you have until then to try to...
If you would look at the numbers again, and let's visit again next meeting.
Are you okay with doing away with the credit card fee?
Yes.
Yep.
So may I just have a motion to that effect?
I'll make a motion that we remove the credit card fee.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Number 18, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding postponed submission to the committees of reference for the upcoming sunset hearing.
Mr. Chairman, board members, I just presented a letter addressing questions that we must respond to the senators of the health committee and the House chair of the health committee. And that is in anticipation of the sunset hearings that would happen likely in January.
Okay. Anything else we have to do with it?
Just show up and testify.
Yes'm.
So if I could just get the approval on that, I'll be able to send it over. It's due September 1, but I've
okay.
already presented it.
I move you have approval.
I second.
Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries. Update on recent SIPAC Commission meeting and postponing, or rather posting, of the proposed SIPAC rules. SIPAC Commission met for the first time, formed itself, passed on creating its bylaws and its operating rules. Those have to go out to public comment for a 60-day period, and they have to go out on the websites of each of the member boards who are in SIPAC. We are a member board of SIPAC, so the rules are now posted via link on our website, so people can go take a look, and I'm sure several groups will be in objection because their rules are much like what our state law is in terms of accredited programs, APA, and residency at the university and some such things. They'll be in place for review for 60 days. That clock has started ticking, as has the next meeting has been established after that. So we're looking to get those approved at the next meeting and open the doorway for the interjurisdictional practice certificate, as well as the e-passport by the end of the year here. So you should see some motion on that. There is an executive committee that's been appointed of the commissioners, and that'll be chaired by Georgia, and I got Shanghai'd into the vice chair spot, so we'll have some input in things on the executive board. And that's about all I can tell you about SIPAC now, except they are...
You're going to Shanghai for that?
I'm going to Shanghai on the 10th, but...
You said you got Shanghai'd.
Yes, I did. I did them all by acclamation. So that's 19. Number 20, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding BACB change in the process for providing verification of passing examination for certification.
Mr. Chairman, Kathy has presented a memo outlining that the BACB now is, as of July 1, is charging applicants $25 to complete the form that we previously required. And so in order to save the applicants that $25, we're asking that the board allow us to change our process and obtain the verification from the BACB registry, which is their online website showing that information that they would previously send us in this signed form.
It sounds reasonable.
Do you need a motion?
Yes.
Pardon?
We need a motion?
Please.
Is there ever an exception that somebody could get licensed without a exam?
No. An exam's required.
Okay.
So we're currently using this form. Now we're not going to. Is that what the motion is?
Yeah, Kathy included a copy of the form that they currently complete the bottom boxes and then sign.
Yeah, we created that.
So now we'll get the information that she's provided on the last page, which is from their website.
Okay. So I will make a motion to for us to utilize, gather the information in the way that our executive director just mentioned.
I'll second that.
Thank you.
You know, we went through a lot when we did this form. Maybe you need a second and then I'll speak.
I second it.
Okay. And we really wanted verification that the exam was passed, that we were not asking for other things. And so they wouldn't give us the exam scores. When we get, for psychologists, we actually get the exam score. And we asked and asked and asked for that, and BCBA refused to give us the exam scores. Yet, you know, ASPPB and other the counseling organization, that we get exam scores, and it's verified. Not only do they pass, we have a score in front of us. This was the best we could come up with, where they would verify that at least they passed. By just downloading, we are back to kind of square one, where the exam has not been verified per se for our records. You know, it's an assumption that they've passed the exam. So to me, you know, we have in our statutes that the person needs to have passed. And by, it's a kind of a double assumption. Oh, you're certified, so that means you must have passed. And scores change. I mean, of course, we don't have a score here, but that was the best we could come up with at the time when we came up with this form. So I'm just raising that as a, you know, because BACB, because this was a real big bone of contention when we were kind of coming up and we were looking for that exam score. And, you know, we are and we get it directly from other. It's like getting a transcript. So just because I can go to NAU's website and verify that you went to NAU, am I going to accept that? No, I want to see the transcript, and I want to see the coursework that you took, not just taking NAU's word that you got that degree from there, you know. And so I just want to raise that. That's why we came up with this form and convinced BACB to attest this form. So we had at least an attestation that this person has taken and passed the exam, and it's in writing, not just, oh, you have the certificate. So that's my point.
Mr. Chair, can I add just a couple of things? Because I agree and I understand. I did have a question. For the psychologists, do they get their scores? Because we don't get our scores either. So just, so I totally understand.
Scores. I have my score.
Yeah, we don't receive scores. We just get a pass or fail. And, let me take that back. If you fail, you get your score. But if you pass, you do not.
I think that was an argument they used. But if you fail, you do, because you need to see your weaknesses. You need
right. To see that feedback to help.
Yeah.
But one of the things that historically has changed with that board is that it used to be that they had small staff, and now they have an entire customer service center. And I'm pretty sure all the customer service center is able to also do is see what's also posted on the website. Like, I don't think they have access or authority to access anything beyond that either. And one of the things that we noted in a more recent application is there was actually an error on a form that we had to reach out to the BACB to get clarification on the error. So I think as they grow, it's also just kind of, I understand your points, and I think they're well taken, but I think that shift there has made it somewhat a little bit more challenging. I think their system now does communicate from the portal that we get. So once something's updated with past, that automatically posts on their website. But they don't share any scores with us either. So, and it's not in our portal. We don't get access to any of that information either. So I'm making an assumption, but I'm guessing it's just the way that they're able, the limitations of probably their electronic system. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any further discussion? Is there anything we need to do on this item?
We have a motion.
We got a motion. We need a vote.
All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Opposed?
I'm going to oppose because I think.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Motion carries with one person in dissent. Number 21, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding recommendations from the Legislative Committee for the upcoming legislative session.
Mr. Chairman, board members, just a quick synopsis. The committee met. The two items that they're reporting to the board for approval at this time would be modifying statutes to include the requirement for the fingerprint clearance card at the time of application and upon renewal, and then modifying the statutes to waive the ECCC requirement for those that have been licensed for greater than 20 years. So the committee would just like to move forward with those issues. They are working on other issues, but are not ready to present a proposal at this point.
Why would we need two now? We don't need to. Establish residency. You don't have to take the exam.
That is correct, but
if you're licensed someplace else.
Yeah, they have to be licensed greater than 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so if you've been licensed and the other state doesn't require the exam, then you can get licensed here, is that?
No, you can get licensed here even if the other state did not require, because you just move here, you show your license, you get licensed.
No, because we have a goofy law. We've had several cases, I think, of the gentleman.
No, but that doesn't apply anymore because of the
right,
other
the
law.
New, right.
But the new law, I think it says, if I read the Attorney General's piece right, that if our law says you need the exam, then if they were from a state that didn't have the exam, then it's void. They can't get the license here.
No, that's not true anymore.
This is more geared towards if somebody had some disciplinary history.
Okay.
Possibly a surrender or revocation.
Then they would have to reapply.
Action.
Okay.
So.
All right.
Because the other law says you can get the license with residency as long as you have no disciplinary.
Right.
This one says
we can, I think the main issue right now, if I may, I don't want to overstep the legislative committee, but the main thing is moving forward with the fingerprint clearance cards. And we can work on this other because the 2569 is so new.
Yeah.
We're still going through it.
No, and the others for the sunset legislation or law thing review, we've got to get that in. Fingerprinting.
I mean, the bigger challenge I found with the when people move here with 20 years of license was not the ECCC, but was the coursework requirement. It was horrendous to try and match coursework requirements. But I think the residency law takes care of that, too.
Yeah.
So.
Move for approval of the fingerprint clearance.
I second.
Any further discussion?
Well, yeah, I'm just wondering on the fingerprints. I know with schools, school system, it's good for 6 years. Would it be the same type and we'd need to do it every 2 years?
It's 6 years.
6 years.
Okay. So just recycle.
Good for if you do it in the right year, you get it for 3 cycles.
Okay. It's good timing.
Yep.
Yeah, I just have an approval, and then we can move on to the next one. I just need a vote.
There's a motion on the floor.
Question.
having discussion, please.
So do I understand that there's still other issues that the legislative committee is working on, like the APA's change in the standards of accreditation? Mm-hmm. Okay, so this isn't all we're putting forward. This is mm-hmm. just what we're putting forward right now.
There's still many issues on the table.
Thank you.
Yeah, up to and including scope of practice. So we're having discussions on bunches of stuff. And trying also the initial meetings with some legislators to get the temperature of what the session is this year.
Who is on the legislative committee, may I ask? You and Dr. Brundage?
Mm-hmm.
And?
That's pretty much it.
Okay, I'm just wondering whether, especially because APA changed its whole coursework kind of thing, and our coursework is so, whether it would be helpful to have Dr. Myers on it as well because of that whole change that happened.
Okay. He can certainly appoint more folks. You bet.
Okay. Sorry, Dr. Myers.
I'm like,
Dr. Malott. Causing
all
trouble.
Right. So do we need to appoint him, or do we need to...
He's appointed.
He's appointed.
Because I think you bring that knowledge.
Yeah. All right.
Wow. That was slick.
Thank you.
Takes us to the end of...
Did we vote on the motion?
No, we haven't. We need to vote on the motion for the fingerprint. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Nobody. Motion carries. That brings us to...
24.
Number 24.
And Mr. Luis Bustamante is here from the
you
Arizona...
You don't want to deal with 24. I've been not wanting to deal with 24.
Okay, well. Mr. Bustamante is here from the Arizona Department of Administration, Human Resources Department, and he is going to assist.
Good afternoon, everyone.
All right. We're up to agenda item 24.
Move to adjourn.
25 item agenda. This is discussion, consideration, and possible. See, that said possible.
True.
Action regarding appointment of an interim executive director and consideration of special assignment. Ms. Jones.
Mr. Chairman, I would recommend that the board. Consider appointing Ms. Michelson as the interim executive director, and that. How do we do this special assignment? Is that just something that we do internally, or is that something the board needs to vote on?
Well, first of all, you all have to agree in the interim, and then there's a form that you have to, fill out, approved by the chairman of the board. And it goes to DOA for approval, and then once it's approved, it takes effect. We can backtrack it. Let's assume that it starts today, mm-hmm. and it takes a week or two to get approved. I don't think it's going to take that long, but if it does, it's going to become retroactive to whenever the motion took place.
All right, so you need a motion? I'll make a motion that we have an interim executive director, Ms. Michels, and that the...
Michelson.
I'm sorry. I need glasses. Ms. Michelson, and that the appointment is retroactive to today's date.
Well, it'd be effective.
The effectiveness.
When I'm gone.
Oh,
well,
that's right.
August 16th.
August 16th.
That's like next
August 17th.
Week.
Yeah.
Yeah. August 17th.
August 17th.
So we need to find somebody who's got board experience and is like retired. And has time on their hands.
That's what we were thinking.
And likes dogs.
So, oh. Could you vote on that motion first, and then we'll move on to the next?
We have a second?
She's gone.
Yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you. Number 25. Thank you.
Number 25. We have to hire an executive director.
Okay. So there's a few things that you as the board have the option of doing. One of them, if you happen to know someone who will be ideal for the job, we can do a direct hire and waive the competitive process. And that, you know, saves you time. I mean, assuming the 16th is next Friday, I believe. That's option one. Option two, you as a board can have private interviews, meaning that if anyone that comes in for a recommendation, you can have a interview, but I would like to see the resume just to make sure that those individuals meet the criteria. And by that, I mean the specifics and knowledge, skills, and abilities of the position. Option number three will be going competitive. I believe Ms. Jones, I shared with her a draft announcement of what the executive director position might look like. That can go live on the website or whichever other boards you want me to reach out to for a minimum of 7 days. Typically, for the executive director, we have a open and to filled. And as long as we are interviewing constantly.
And who does the interviewing?
We do.
You all do.
Okay. Similar to what we did when we hired Ms. Jones.
Yeah.
But I think we did it under the first option.
No, we interviewed several people.
You did?
Yeah, mm-hmm. We did.
Two. We interviewed three people.
Three people.
Two, actually. One dropped out.
Okay.
When they heard she was in the running. Scared them away.
Yeah, so, you know, depending on how, if you want to go competitive, let's assume that the posting goes live today, then by next Friday, I'll take it down at midnight. By Monday, we'll get qualified candidates only. Out of that batch, you'll let me know which ones you want to consider for interviews, and then I'll reach out to them and schedule those interviews based on your availability.
How do we appoint an interim person?
We just did.
That's done.
We did. Check. As Michaelson. You want to just wait? Let her do it for a while and then figure out what we want to do?
How long can an interim person stay in the interim position?
Up to 6 months.
Okay.
If it needs to go any higher than that, it's ADO.
Got it.
So what that does, though, is it puts a lot of pressure on staff, though, because now you're down a person, and I don't know what the workload is or how that's going to affect the staff. I think that's, having lived through that before in my career, I'm not sure how that's, I guess I'd want some thoughts on that from someone.
Well, this time of year, it's busy getting all the year-end reports. But that's my goal. They'll all be submitted before I walk out the door. So it will just be maintaining what's already in motion. Kathy and Krishna and Jennifer have a great grasp on the CSC, which will be the next meeting. And then you've got the RPA, and then the next board meeting's in, on the phone. So I don't think the workload's going to be any greater than normal, and all these year-end reports will be done and submitted.
Pending legislation that we're facing.
Yeah, the legislation will be the biggest thing, but it's August. I can work on getting a folder opened, and it's really not a big push until November.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other questions?
So I think we need direction whether you're going to post, do a direct hire. I think I'm understanding the full board wants to interview.
Yeah.
But I think unless someone has someone in mind for direct hire, we should probably go ahead and post. Would that be the recommendation?
So.
Yeah.
Sounds like the third option. I haven't heard any names. Has any...
I have to think about it. I mean, I haven't really thought about it.
My HR specialist and manager of things, executive here. Let's go ahead and post. Does that make more sense? Post.
Yeah. Another point I wanted to bring up is the range of the salary range that you would like the position to be posted. I ran some numbers, but I don't know if you want to discuss that privately or if you want me to send it through email or if you want to make that public.
What's the salary range?
So for an E2, the minimum that it can go for is $64,101. And the maximum that I don't recommend to go all the way up there is $121,150.
Can we say commensurate with salary and experience, with experience and so that gives us the flexibility to.
Yeah. Also, I ran a report for previous incumbents of the position, and I got an average for that. And keeping in mind how much every E executive director level two, that's what it is, or E2, how much they're making for every other board and commission, the average for them, it's $93,883. With that in mind, and also keeping in mind the previous incumbent, a good average to have the position posted for will be $80,000 to $95,000. Anything higher than that, I mean, I'll leave it up to you, but I wouldn't recommend anything higher than $95,000, $96,000 for the position. Because whatever you guys decide to pay to this person, it has to come to me. I have to write a report for classification and compensation. It goes to my director. From there, it goes to the governance office for their acknowledgement. And I know that if we stay within that ballpark, I know it's going to be approved. Within days, so.
But for the posting, you don't need that number, correct?
No, but in my experience, because I handle all executive directors for this board, we're not going to get that many applicants if we just leave it open for depending on experience.
Yeah, I think that if you put that dollar amount, you'll pique more interest.
Right, and then it avoids any discrepancies from the future because we all know that whoever's applying for that position is sticking within that range, hopefully.
But if someone came that was making more, can you go over that range?
Not over the 121.
No, but okay, but over the 83.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it becomes more difficult to hire. You go from 95.
You know, and I can share this with you. I actually hired one person once that was making $250,000, and she dropped all the way to 85,000. So just because somebody's making, significantly more, doesn't mean that. They want to set a position that pays less than what they're making.
Much like the heat.
So could you set it from 75 to 90?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, I mean, we can try it. Like I said, you have an interim. So if that doesn't work out and you don't believe that any of the applicants that are coming through are significant value, we can go ahead and repost the position for a little longer and then change the salary range for that too.
Sounds good.
Any other questions? Any things we should know?
Okay, so the position description is already created, which is the heart of the position and lets me know the requirements. In the announcement for selective factors, I don't remember what I titled it. It only asks for either a bachelor's degree or a master's, but it doesn't specify a field. So that if we're going to change that or depending on how many years of experience you wanted to be in the posting, we need to change the position description first. And that it's a matter of going up to one of my colleagues. It will take anywhere between 24 to 48 hours to change. But I would recommend looking through the job description, the PD, and if there's any changes, significant changes that has to be included on the position, then to go ahead and make those changes first.
It currently has a preference will be given to candidates with an undergraduate or graduate degree.
Doesn't list a degree, though? How about in such areas such as public administration, psychology, behavior analyst? I mean, I think you want to get, you can say such areas as.
Can we just say health professions or.
Or public administration.
Public administration.
Because really it's an administrative position, but if you have both of those qualifications with the health background.
That helps.
Yeah.
Can you put anything but attorney?
I'm just sitting right in front of you. Yeah, I would hire you.
Thanks.
But that's not even a bad thing. You need to have some legal understanding of how rules and laws work. I mean, that's part of the whole, and procedural.
It's a regulatory business. You need some background. And
do you want someone with preferred 3 to 5 years experience in regulatory?
I think that's for an executive director.
Yeah.
For
I think management with regulatory background. I'm not sure if regulatory is the right word, though.
Supervisory?
Well, management or.
Well, I think regulatory and legislative. Dr. Brundage.
One of my thoughts is that we've been extremely fortunate in the selection of the last two executive directors on their length of experience. I think that if we create too many expectations, it may be difficult to fill. Certainly, I think that we may have applicants that are actually psychologists or whatever. It would be lovely to have that background in administrative proceedings. I don't know how large our sample pool will be. I guess the question I have to members of the board is, what do you think is the minimum criteria for an executive director of this
high school education?
I'd say a bachelor's degree with a preference for the master's in the executive level, about five to 7 years experience.
Minimum?
Yes. Well, you're talking executive level. At that salary, I would think so.
I have to like puppies.
Yes. Have to like dogs.
I'll make sure to add that to the questions.
I know. Those are just my thoughts.
Well, I think managerial experience, because you could get somebody who's kind of moving up, and they've had... They may have not been an executive director, but they're ready for that.
Right. That's but in the experience, I mean, that many years in the business.
I think the word we use is progressively, there's a term, you know, that is progressive. Increasing in.
Mm-hmm. Other questions or issues? We're on our way.
Yeah, and other than that, I took the liberty of bringing a step-by-step guide that you know I can share with Ms. Jones, and you know she can share it with you, letting you know who's responsible for what. I mean, we can always, if you say anything that I'm responsible for, that you're responsible for, but you want to, you know, take on the activity, then you're more than welcome. But just to give you an idea of how this recruitment will look, I'm expecting a position to from the day that it goes live to the time that we hire someone to be about 45 days or so. That's the average that I'm saying below 45 days, but at the most, in the best case scenarios. With that said, I also have a set of questions that other boards and commissions have used in the past. You're welcome to look through them and see if you're interested in seeing them. However, because the interim, I'm not sure if the interim might be interested in the position, but I'll keep it private between the executive directors and board members only.
Good.
Are you interested? Should we just like select a couple of us to be part of it? I mean, help weed that through?
Would you like to assign a committee? Maybe Ms. Shreve could chair a committee?
I would ask Ms. Shreve to chair our committee, as she is the professional with extensive years of experience in...
Yep, I'd be happy to.
...in such management issues.
And then that way they can pre-screen the applicants and then decide who to interview.
And then just be mindful that whichever committee you select, if you have four board members that are part of the first interview, they have to be part of the all interviews the same. You can swap interviews.
Can't have them interchangeable.
Right.
Same people all through.
Same people and same questions.
Okay. Can a staff member serve on the committee? It just has to be? Okay.
Yeah.
I would put one of the staff members. Okay. Maybe... Ms. Folks or Krishna.
But just remember, for staff members, I will keep the questions away from them. Just because from what I've seen in my experience, you'll see executive directors and deputy directors from this building applying. So if they have access to the questions, I would like to limit that.
Yeah.
You can't post them outside here, though.
No. He's so cute.
So who would you like to serve with Ms. Shreve?
Volunteers?
I can commit.
Sweet.
Both of us.
Excellent.
Yeah, we got two people. We'll get it done.
Maybe one staff member.
I would think probably Jennifer.
Not Jennifer.
Okay, then Kathy?
Yeah, it can't be Jennifer if she applies.
Oh, okay.
She's interim. Yeah.
I don't Kathy. Think she's going to apply. but Kathy not. Would be a good...
And then one last thing. There will be some forms that I will need for you to complete and... sign, which I think you have more than enough time, but in your absence, the interim director will be responsible for signing those forms, and then I'll share that with you once I get back to the office.
Okay. Thank you for all your assistance. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me here.
And I'm sorry we had to keep you waiting.
Oh, no worries. I once waited 5 hours, so you know,
oh my gosh.
Not so bad.
No, we're much more efficient than that. Again, thank you.
Thank you.
That was wonderful. And we're at that point in the agenda where we ask for items for future meetings. Hearing none at this point. Thank everyone for coming, taking the time out of your schedule. Thank all the folks in the audience for coming and helping to support us.
Did you want to do a quick call to the public in case?
Another one?
Oh, never mind.
Yeah, she's gone.
And
Dr. Obi was going to thank us for appointing her to her, helping her get her position.
Why did she leave? Somebody say something?
Yeah, right.
I know. The only thing I have to wrap up here is to again thank Ms. Jones for doing a hell of a job.
Yeah.
We'll get her longer. But
Yay! Exactly.
As was already stated, we've been very fortunate having a couple executive directors who really helped us stay on track and kept moving and on top of issues. I can tell you she's a trooper with the legislative issues that we get into, and boy, get right through that place and deal with those things quite well. So I'm going to miss that, but also going to wish you well in moving forward with a very large operation they have in California and Sacramento, and they got a crappy basketball team, don't they? It's got to be something bad about it. But thank you, Ms. Jones.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
The State of Arizona Board of Psychologists Examiners meeting of August 9th is now adjourned.